Monday morning in Melbourne, the sporting capital of the world. This is your town. This is your station. This is Waitley. Red Energy, the power behind the voice. Discover your ultimate driving machine at Doncaster BMW.
Good morning. The storylines are compelling. Melbourne in its first preliminary final in 18 years, heading back to the venue of their emotional breakthrough a month ago, and Demons fans plotting a caravan of courage across the continent. Back home, Richmond and Collingwood will contest what has already been labelled the most anticipated preliminary final in living memory. It's hard to disagree, given the taster that we got before 88,000 in round 19 as an ancient grudge is given a full modern airing. The ticket sales and the travel arrangements are a story of their own, and that's yours to tell through the morning on 9429 1116. Stephen Quartermain and David King will look back and forward, and we'll start through a coach's eye with Chris Fagan in the studio to take us through how the semis unfolded.
Oliver with a hand pass, Brayshaw's back into the fray, got it to his boot, Melbourne to the 50, Milksham plays Crummer, onto the boot, gave it a look, got it when it was most needed. Jake Milksham roars to the Melbourne fans who roar right back.
Crossy actually, runner came to me and told me to come off. I've got a chance against Ruffy in the centre bounce. They've kicked two or three in a row and I was able to get my hand on it. We won the clearance and got a goal and then I came off for my rest.
Have a listen to the Melbourne fans.
Wow. Look at the players, they're stunned.
You can just see the MCC, you can see the joy that our supporters are getting from this journey. And they do, they inspire us. You know, they're like another player out there.
Plenty against Cox, ball got to the back to Goey. Quickly hand the ball, beat the buzzer. Collingwood have kicked the goal after each the quarter time and the half time siren. And there's a proper fight in the aftermath. They have been building towards a brawl right throughout this second term. And it's as feisty as you get in the modern game. The Collingwood crowd try to assert itself and intimidate the Giants, who will not take a backward step. Kicked it up to Ngoi. He's on the turn. He feeds it to Varko, who eyes the goals and runs it home. Collingwood strike first in the final term.
He's going to turn and kick it to full form. And the siren's out. September gets even better. Joining the frenzy, and they've done it in the way they've done it all year. They've been challenged, there's been adversity, but they have got to the line.
The sounds of the weekends, the semi-finals, which set up these enticing prelims. Brisbane Lions coach Chris Fagan has come into the studio to work through it all. Chris, welcome.
Thanks, Jared. Good to be here.
Have we got the right four?
Yeah, I think so. I felt like Melbourne, I know, finished outside the top four at the end of the home and away, but if you look at their percentage and the fact that they lost about five games, I think by 10 points or less, they were pretty unlucky not to be in that top four. So as it's rolled out, I think it's a fair indication of the season.
You went to both games. How did you find the MCG?
The MCG on Friday night was a fantastic place to be, particularly if you're a Melbourne supporter. There was a lot of emotion there. For the first time ever, I was sitting up in the MCC. Members area, and a lot of Melbourne supporters around me, a lot of people I knew from my time at Melbourne, and was a real arm wrestle of a final. I thought that Hawthorn could well have held a lead at half time. Melbourne got their act together in the second half around contested ball and got on top and were able to win the game. And you know, the emotion from their fans when the siren went and when they realised that they were going to win was something to see. And that's been 2 weeks in a row now. It's pretty similar for the Geelong game. The game on Saturday night, thought Collingwood dominated the game really, and probably should have won by more than the 10 points. Surprisingly, I thought that GWS might have had the edge in the contested ball, but that wasn't to be. And Collingwood were fantastic in that area, won the territory battle, and you know, just peppered the goals all night long.
You were at Melbourne in 2000 when they went on their last run to a prelim and then to the grand final. Can you recognise any of what's going on now?
I remember when I first turned up to Melbourne, the talk always was that, you know, if Melbourne got into finals, I always seemed to get some momentum. So I guess that happened back in 1988. It happened a little bit in Neil's first year at the Demons in 1998, got through to a prelim. And then in 2000, same thing happened again. And that particular year, I think we weren't even in the eight at the halfway mark of the season, and then won eight of the last nine home and away games and entered that final series on a tremendous roll, and very similar to this year's team. So maybe that's in the psyche of the Melbourne Football Club. I'm not sure. I hope it is. It'll be fantastic to see them to get through to a grand final, but they've got a big task this weekend in Perth.
There was that great moment when the chant went up, when the players were just milling to go down to the rooms, and I haven't heard a Melbourne crowd do that before. It was a spine-tingling moment.
It was, wasn't it? I mean, I didn't realise Melbourne had so many supporters. I mean, I don't think their membership reflects that, and I'm pretty sure the people who run the club are hoping that a lot of those supporters become members next year. But no, it was one of those fantastic moments. It was a little bit like the preliminary final last year when Richmond beat GWS, and the Tiger supporters sang the song with great gusto for half an hour after the game, and the whole stadium was rocking. So similar sort of event.
What did you make of the tactical battle on Friday night? It's, if you do frame it, of chaos versus control, is Hawthorn probably had its game in shape for longer periods than Melbourne. How did you read it from a coach's perspective?
Yeah, I think so. I thought in the first half Melbourne were able to win contested ball and then get some composure with it and chip it around and play their normal possession style and look really dangerous. And, I think deserved to have a lead at half time. In the second half, Melbourne started to win contested possession, surge the ball forward, turn up like they do, and put real pressure on the Hawks. So it was a game of two halves, so to speak. Hawthorn got what they want in the first half, Melbourne in the second half, and in a sense, the game could well have been a game won by less than a goal by either side. You look at the shots on goal, fairly equal on the night. But just that little bit of poise and polish in front of goals. Jack Gunston uncharacteristically kicks 3 goals, 5. I mean, he played a fantastic game. But, you know, that was probably telling in the end, I think. Just it's the biggest stat in football, I think, accuracy.
Would Hawthorn be unfulfilled to go out in straight sets?
Oh, internally, they would be disappointed because they're a very proud footy club. If you're looking at from my perspective, I think they did a brilliant job this year to finish top four, because they are trying to rebuild themselves somewhat after that successful era. Had a lot of young players in the team this year. To finish top four was a fantastic result for them. To get two finals was a great result also. And they've played Richmond and Melbourne, and they could easily be the grand finalists this year. So they've had a pretty tough draw during the finals. So from an external point of view, I would have thought they should be proud of their efforts. But internally, knowing Clarko, he'll be frustrated that they didn't at least win one final.
Would it be different to the last time they went out in straight sets a couple of years ago?
Oh, it'd be very different, because that was Hodge and Mitchell and Lewis and Gibson and all those guys were still playing, and it was a fairly old, experienced team. Whereas that landscape's changed pretty quickly over the last couple of years, and they're a different team altogether. So to be back there so soon afterwards is a mighty effort.
There was a signature moment for you when you were watching, and that was when the frost kick in early in the game.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Like, it was so bold at the start to pull out the big torp up the middle of the ground, and he struck it beautifully. He couldn't have kicked it any better. And for them to score that goal, I thought it was a real statement of their intent, that they were, if they were going to go down, they were going to go down playing bravely. And they set the standard from the start, and I think everybody in the MCG was amazed to see it, but it was a fantastic piece of play.
The idea of learning to win, so this, from my perspective, is what Melbourne has been through the year, and they botched the end of the Geelong game in the home and away. They learn their lessons. They implement them against West Coast in Perth. They're pretty nerveless last week, and then they were challenged. They were very panicky at the start of the last quarter. I thought very commendable to get through that. This is part of your journey with your players. How do you learn to win? And once you do, what's that worth to you?
Well, you learn to win from losing those close ones. You know, I think back to Hawthorn 2011, 2012. During that period of time, I think we might have won about 35-40% of the close games. And the preliminary final in 2011 was a less than a goal, I think, against Collingwood. And then the grand final the next year against the Swans was a 10-point game. And I think that disappointment is what sort of forges you as a group. You get to the point where you've had enough of that and you want to do something about it. And I think Melbourne reached that point this year for sure. I know with the Hawks, that point came after that 2012 grand final. We're so determined not to lose close games again. That percentage of winning close games jumped from 40% to 80% in the next 3 years, and the Hawks became the close game specialist. So it all just comes through that experience. I think you've got to lose sometimes to let it rip away inside of you and make you rise to another level. And I believe that's probably the case with Melbourne. I can remember watching that game against Geelong and the body language and the disappointment when the siren won and they tried so hard but still lost. I think their coaching group handled that magnificently well and they learnt from it and have grown from it. Now we see a team who believe they can win those games.
The Collingwood side of things, you were struck by Jordan De Goey.
Yeah, he's just, when you just watch him in isolation, he's got two great attributes. He reads the play as quick as anyone that I've seen, and his leg speed is amazing. So he goes from behind his opponent to 3 metres in front of his opponent in no time. And to have a target like that is fantastic for them. And just to go and watch him play is exhilarating. He's a fantastic player. I mean, you know, Dustin Martin goes forward for Richmond, but he's different. He uses his strength more than anything else. This lad does everything. He can jump up a market. His speed off the mark is incredible. And, you know, he was definitely the difference on Saturday night.
So he played deep forward, maybe necessity, maybe when he rolled the ankle early, but he pretty well never left the deepest part of the ground for the night.
No, he didn't. Collingwood made the ground long, didn't they? You look, there'd be a stoppage on the wing and Jordan De Goey would be 90 metres away in the goal square. So that's how they used him. But, I mean, him in space for his opponent is incredibly dangerous. You need to be a great player to play on him. And, you know, maybe the injury caused that, but I think they were utilising one of his great strengths and they have confidence going forward when he plays in that position.
Did the use of Mason Cox catch your eye?
Well, I've thought he's the first player in the AFL I've seen that's the professional stand on the mark man. Mm-hmm. I noticed every time GWS were having a shot on goal, particularly in the second half, that he was the man standing on the mark, and he was pretty good at it too, because they tried to take him on once or twice and he was still able to get some pressure on, but he could be the first in the AFL, I think. I've not seen that before.
Specialised role, yeah.
Standing on the mark specialist, that's it. 8 foot with his hands up, he's a tall target.
If it's a game of inches, they're using every last inch.
They are.
So the rise from 13th, so Richmond did it last year and took it all the way. Collingwood would have taken it to a preliminary final. As a coach of a team who is trying to rise, what's the lesson in it?
To stick at it. I mean, you know, Bucks and Collingwood copped a lot of criticism in the last few years about where they were heading. But, you know, teams take time to develop, to get that synergy, playing with and for each other. And, you know, obviously if you read the press, there was a lot of soul-searching done at the end of last year, and out of it's come a fairly new, probably less intense approach by Bucks to his coaching and using his assistant coaches to do a lot more of the work that he used to do himself, and that they're a happier group of players. So, you know, sometimes when that pressure's released and those guys have played together a little bit more, I think then comes the opportunity for improvement. So that's what it is. It's a fine line in this competition too. There's not so much of a gap between the teams. So it's just those little things, that little bit of confidence, those few early wins that can make a huge difference.
Is it important that year on year it reinforces that these sorts of rises are possible?
Absolutely it is. I mean, I'll point that out to my players on a regular basis. Now, sometimes you can think you're a long way away, but you're closer than you think. So, you know, you just got to work hard on your preparation, and then the icing on the cake is when that belief comes along that you can do it. And, you know, I've seen it in little glimpses with our group this year, particularly in that patch where we won 3 in a row, and the look on their faces and the excitement that, oh, we can actually compete and do well against the better teams was great to see. So no doubt that happens at other clubs. As coaches, we all strive for it. And when it comes, it's very exciting.
What about the Giants? Is if you're closer than you think, can you be further away than you think? How would Leon Cameron feel about his season, do you think, in the cold light of day on a Monday morning?
Oh, he'll be honest about it. And he might be too honest. I've felt for the last 2 years the Giants have been incredibly unlucky with injury. And they've still, made it to a prelim final last year and were very competitive against Richmond in that game. And the loss of Dylan Scheel, I think, during the second quarter was a major blow. I think this year they've had it stacked up against them as well. I actually think he's coached the team really well. He'll probably tell you that he hasn't, and that they've underachieved with the talent that they've got. But, if I were involved at the Giants and I was a coach, I'd be having a good long hard look at the physical preparation side of things and what are we doing to prevent injury. And I haven't got their injury list in front of me to know exactly the nature of those injuries, but some you can't do much about. But if it's a lot of soft tissue and stuff like that, or it's reoccurring stuff, then it's really hurting the team. But I think, if he looks at it honestly, they've probably done really well, and they just need to improve their player availability, and it's the biggest stat in football, that one, I think.
Yeah. Chris Fagan's the Brisbane Lions coach in the studio. He's had a look back. We'll have a look forward next. What's to come in these prelims? What's to come with the Lions, and what's to come with, say, a longer goal square? We will explore that next. Tell me how you're going with tickets 0433 98 11 16, the text, and we will open the lines shortly. It's 16 minutes past 9.
On 11.16 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport, you're listening to Waitley. Want to have your say? Ring Jared on 9429 1116. Red Energy, the power behind the voice. Discover your ultimate driving machine at Doncaster BMW. Now back to Waitley.
Monday morning is all about tickets. Jared, my amazing sister, just got 8 tickets in the Olympic stand. Woohoo! A family divided, 5 Tigers, 3 Pies. Bring it on. Adam from Rosebud, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, got tickets level 1 Ponsford stand, can't wait to go. And the next, still in the queue, nervous. I'm in the queue, this is killing me, 25 minutes, go Tigers. We will live this journey over the next couple of hours with you and see how you go. Chris Fagan, the Brisbane Lions coach, is in the studio. We've looked back at the semis, now ahead to the prelims. What happens on Friday night, Richmond and Collingwood, Chris?
Well, Richmond will be fresh and raring to go, and Collingwood will be feeling good about themselves, particularly after their performance against GWS. They're both in similar sides in a way. They're both teams full of 6'2" ruck rovers that play midfield and forward. I'm always a believer that the team that gets the rest is in a better position to win the game than the team that's had to continue its way through. But I think, if you look at Collingwood's performances against Richmond this year, I think they've been in both games and suffered injuries at bad times in the game and haven't been able to sort of finish off what they started. So Richmond would be a little bit nervous, but I just fancy that the fact that they're fresh, they've got a forward, a system that stands up well in finals. They don't, it's pretty simple. Kick it long, turn up. Kick it long, turn up. And they do it brilliantly well. And it stood up last year and it's stood up again this year. They've been the best team in the home and away. And I think that they might just edge Collingwood out in the end. But I think it'll be an exciting game with obviously a massive crowd.
And Melbourne, well, they've just been across to the Western, beaten West Coast. It was the game that opened up the possibilities for them. Could they repeat the deed?
Well, they could because they have momentum. The only thing is Kennedy's back into that team, and the last time they played, Darling was injured fairly early in the piece and off the ground. And if you look at West Coast's results this year when those two guys play together, it's pretty formidable. So, again, West Coast have been able to sit back, have the rest. Melbourne have been on an emotional finals campaign. I think they'll give a good account of themselves, but I just feel like that freshness that West Coast have and the capacity of their two big forwards to really influence a game, we'll see them get over the line.
All right, so they've been 1-2 for a good portion of the season, so that's how you think they'll land this weekend.
I think they might, but I'm hoping that the D's get up, to be honest.
A little more broadly.
Yeah.
So when you're in the race for Lachie Neale, are you on the dark side of the moon? Do you just have to wait now for an answer?
Yeah, it is. It is one of those sort of nerve-wracking periods for all coaches, and it's worse for the ones that are not in the finals, I think, because that's our next big thing, that trade period. So, you know, you're hopeful that the players that you're talking to will give your club the nod, and then you hope that the deal can get done. But there's a lot of water to pass under the bridge. Clubs will always try hard to keep their good players. So we'll keep our fingers crossed, keep working hard, and hopefully some dominoes tip our way.
Is it literally the case that you get the chance to, you make your case to Lockie, and then you just sit and you wait, and one day the call comes one way or the other?
I'm sort of not that much of part of it. It's more the list management, Dom Ambrogio and David Noble, who handle that. So there's always ongoing discussions, I think, with managers and players that go on. Every now and then they pull the coach in for a chat, but I don't expect that will happen between now and the end of the trade period. So, but you're always trying to make a case and get that player over the line.
Does your mind wander to, gee, could be so important for us if we could get him?
I think for a club in our situation, we're always looking to add A-grade talent that can help our young players improve relatively quickly, and we're not on our own in that. There are a lot of clubs are in the same boat. So, we'll just keep our fingers crossed that things work our way and that we are able to land some of those players that we've been talking to.
Are you in a position where you've taken enough early picks that you're prepared to trade that first pick for a ready-made A-grader?
Yeah, we've certainly had a good go over the last two seasons. I think we had three or four picks 2 years ago in the top 20-odd players and three last year inside 20. So, and they all look like they're going to be good players. I think they would definitely benefit by having a little bit more experience around them, as we've seen this year with Charlie Cameron and Luke Hodge coming to the club. It's just made our boys stand a little taller and learn a little quicker.
We've got Jason in Beaconsfield Upper, who's a Lions fan for you. Chris, Jason, welcome.
G'day, Jared. G'day, Fag.
How are you, mate?
Good, thanks, mate. Just thought I'd get on with seeing you on there, mate. Just wanted to say on behalf of all Brisbane Lions fans, a big thank you to you, mate. You really have been a breath of fresh air in a club that, been pretty dismal for the last, 5 to 10 years. Just the vibe around that's coming out of there. Everyone's up and about, and everyone's excited about what the future can hold. I think now we know that we've got to be patient. There's not going to be a quick fix, but seeing the boys play, and you can just see how much they really want to play for the coach, which makes all our supporters really stand tall at the games. I'm a ex-Fitzroy supporter, and I had a lot of dark times back in the old days, and then the three premierships, and it's all sort of fallen back. But since you and Nobes have come along, and the club seems to be in the right direction. And just on another thing, you just obviously would have caught the results with the Fitzroy boys having a win on the weekend. Obviously your pep talk during the week has done wonders, mate.
I would have thought that made absolutely no difference. The coach down there, Luke Marnie's done a terrific job. His brother Josh is at Melbourne, so the Marnie family's on a roll. But it was great for Fitzroy. They won the seniors and reserves, and I don't think my words made that much difference. And thanks for your positive feedback about the Lions.
Is that connection important to the old Fitzroy?
Yeah, we work hard as a club to stay connected to our Melbourne-based supporter group and Fitzroy Football Club. And, the fact that I went down to training on Thursday night, I don't think that made any difference to the result, because they were a particularly good team during the year. But it was just good to, because I was in Melbourne, to be able to go down and say hello and wish them all the best, which is fundamentally all I did.
Ian is in Bond Beach. Ian, welcome.
Good morning, Jared. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
I echo that previous call. We've had a great year, and we look forward. I'm a long-time Fitzroy supporter from back in the Brunswick Street days, so been around for a while. I just wanted to ask you briefly, Chris, about Daniel McStay. He seems to have enormous talent, and he's a great long kick and a great mark, but he never seems to sort of rise above it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a good observation. I think Daniel himself is a little frustrated by the fact that he hasn't yet been able to take that next step. And I say yet because I'm confident that he will. This year's probably the first year that he's played in the one position all year long. He's always been switched between key defender, key attack. And this year we sort of persevered with him down forward. I think he had over 40 shots on goal. He needs to work on his accuracy. His contested marking is as good as anyone in the competition. And I think he's a bit like his teammates. Once he really starts to believe in himself, he could take the next step as a player. But I understand your frustration as a supporter, and I think Daniel is equally as frustrated with himself at times. So he'll work hard at his game, and we're confident that he'll come through.
One more with Chris Fagan after the news headlines with Meredith Gibbs. Thanks, Meredith. Ever had a player quit mid-game, Chris?
No.
That'd be a coaching challenge.
It would be. Never heard of that. Does that mean he's quit permanently or just for that day?
Oh, if he's quit for the day, I reckon you might say, right, it's my choice now. You're out. Jeepers. Hey, last one, Chris, as we finish up. At the longer goal square, so the competition committee met, you've made your recommendations to the commission. I think there's a bit of fear around it, and there's a bit of naysaying around it. Why would the longer goal square benefit the game?
I think the belief is, and the research that the AFL has done, is that the ability to kick the ball in further to the wider part of the oval will open the ground up and assist the team kicking the ball in to score more regularly. The statistics at the moment show that there's more of a chance that the opposition who kicked the point is going to score again than there is that you're going to score at the other end. So, the fans want higher scoring and more excitement, and they believe that that's one of the things that we could do to enhance that doesn't change the game too much. So that's the belief.
And so are you won over by the research?
I think so. I trust that those guys have done a lot of work on it. And, it was put to a vote in the competition committee the other day. So it wasn't as if the AFL came in and told us what they're going to do. The suggestion was made, and hands went up around the table, and it was a strong majority that went for it. And we'll just see how it goes. I think after a while just the fans will probably just adjust and we'll move on. But I think it'll bring a bit more excitement to kick-ins. You know, we saw the Torp on Friday night. Well, you can just imagine the ball reaching the centre of the ground or beyond, and the capacity for the team kicking in to score will be really exciting.
So you think it might stimulate strategy?
I think it will, yeah. There'll be no doubt a lot of practice done over summer, and whether it's the long kick or whether it's some shorter kicks to start off with to get through, I'm not sure, but it'll probably be all of those things at different times, and hopefully it's a good result for the game.
Chris, appreciate you coming in. Good on you, and the very best of luck through the off-season in what you're trying to land.
Pleasure, Jared. Thanks very much.
Chris Fagan, the Brisbane Lions coach, setting up the weekend for us. What a week this is going to be in Melbourne. Jen Whittam has tweeted afl.com.au. Dusty still sore, being kept out of the main group of training this morning on light drills. Nathan Broad, another not part of the squad, ran half a lap on his own and isn't taking part in the warm-up. So that's an eyewitness account from training. We'll get another one of those after 10 when David King comes in to run the means test. Stephen Quatermain is up next, and we will open the dodo. NBN open line 9429 1116. A great set of texts from those who are getting tickets, and a real sense of nerves from those who are still in the queue. This is Waitley, powered by Red Energy, a 100% Australian-owned electricity and gas retailer. Switch today. And thanks to Doncaster BMW. Visit the team to drive your ultimate driving machine today.